Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us today. My name is Angela Peacock, and I'm a subject of the film Medicating Normal. I am a trained social worker and therapist, but I do not practice that kind of social work. And I was harmed by a psychiatric medication I took as prescribed, which caused me to become part of this movement of people bringing attention to harm being done in the mental health care system. I also volunteered doing outreach for the film, and I host conversations like this one today. This is our 24th interview, and today our guest is Katinka Blackford Newman. Katinka is an award-winning BBC-trained documentary filmmaker who lives in London. Her interest in antidepressants began in 2012 when she nearly lost her life because of an adverse reaction to an antidepressant. She was hospitalized and prescribed more drugs, which made her extremely ill. After a year, she was lucky to be taken off all the drugs and made a full recovery. She researched the side effects of antidepressants and interviewed some of the world's leading experts. Her best-selling book, The Pill That Steals Lives, has been featured on Radio 5 Live, BBC London, Good Morning Britain, the Victoria Derbyshire Show, and in The Times, The Sunday Times, The Daily Mail, and the British Journal of Psychiatry. In 2017, her research was made into a BBC Panorama program called A Prescription for Murder, which investigated whether an antidepressant could be the cause of one of the worst mass killings of the century. This year, she co-founded a not-for-profit organization to highlight the dangers of antidepressants. Antidepressantrisks.org is run by a team of experts, including Professor David Healy, who we just had 2 weeks ago, and people who had the firsthand experience of antidepressants, including Sarah Kulshaw, who lost her brother because of an adverse event to an antidepressant, and Dr. Ed White, who is suffering side effects. In the Stolen Lives section of the new site, it provides people with a platform to tell their stories in their own words. Welcome, Katinka. What's it like to hear all of that you've been through?
Oh, gosh. I suppose just to say, I knew nothing about antidepressants at all until 2012. I have no scientific background whatsoever.
Go ahead, sorry.
I don't know what that was about. And so, yes, I was one of the normal that was medicated, as in the title of your brilliant film. I wasn't depressed at all. I was distressed. And it cost me, it cost me a year of my life. And as I say that, I feel very humbled because I know that there will be people who are listening to this who have had far worse damage from antidepressants and psychiatric drugs. And I'm reminded of your story and some of the other many brilliant stories in the film of people whose lives have been completely destroyed. And I'm very mindful of the fact that you had, I think, 13 years of your life stolen by psychiatric drugs. Right. And you were on a far bigger cocktail than I was. I think the most that I was ever on at one time was eight, I think. But anyway, I was normal and medicated, and I can tell you I became very abnormal for a year, and it nearly cost me my life. And and since then, like you, I've been motivated to help people understand that these drugs can be helpful to some, but to others they can be very dangerous. Mm. They carry risks.
Yeah. So can you share a little bit about your personal story of why you started to take an antidepressant? You know, kind of take us through your story that eventually led to the book.
Sure. So in 2012, my marriage fell apart. My 12-year marriage fell apart. I had two young children, Lily and Oscar, who were, I think they were about 10 and 11 at the time. And I coped quite well. In fact, I coped very well, but a few months later, it became apparent that we were going to have to sell the family home. And I'd always thought that me and the kids would stay there. And it was very traumatic for me that we were going to have to move out of the neighbourhood. So I was working full time as a film director, and I had some sleeping tablets that I've been prescribed for jet lag. I couldn't sleep, and I stupidly actually started taking sleeping tablets. And I took them for a few nights. It wasn't really helping. And I went to the doctor because I wanted to get some more sleeping pills. He wouldn't give me any more sleeping pills. And I was prescribed an antidepressant. And I didn't really think anything of it at the time. I thought it would calm me down, help me to sleep. I at no point did I think about the side effects. I probably didn't even read the leaflet. But anyway, I took the antidepressant, which was escitalopram, Lexapro, I think is the generic name. And within hours, I started looking back, I started having an adverse reaction. I started having akathisia. I'm sure that most of your listeners will know what akathisia is. And for those who don't, it's an acute inner restlessness. I couldn't sit still. And I kind of lost the plot. But I think I must have taken a second tablet, possibly a third. It's all a little bit hazy. But anyway, I had two nights of not sleeping at all. And so by the Saturday, I took the antidepressant on the Thursday. On the Saturday, I went into a full-blown psychosis. And I cannot begin to describe how terrifying that was. Anybody who's experienced an antidepressant-induced psychosis, my goodness, it was literally, I thought I'd killed the children. Everything was brightly, everything was brightly coloured. I was having hallucinations where I was looking down above myself and I could see myself stabbed. I thought I'd stabbed my stomach. I saw blood pouring out of my stomach. It was the most horrendous trip, I suppose. I thought that I was being filmed by every, I thought I was kind of like the Truman Show kind of thing, that I was being filmed and that everything was being broadcast to the nation and that I was on this game show and everybody was voting as to who was the better parent, whether it was me or my ex. My children thought, ooh, you know, something is weird, something strange is going on. So they phoned my ex-husband, who kindly came around, and my sister came around. My ex-husband had private insurance, and so they rang a private hospital. I was admitted. They sedated me. And then the next morning I woke up and I'm still acutely psychotic. I remember looking up and thinking, oh, there are cameras in the ceiling. And so when the psychiatrist came to interview me, I said, well, of course, there's a suicide pact with God. And I have to kill myself so that my ex-husband can have the children. So what I missed out in this is that in the full-blown psychosis, I don't really remember it, but I had actually taken a knife and I'd stabbed my arm. And I think that in my confusion, I thought that I'd then stabbed the children. And so whilst I was in this private hospital, my sister was trying to calm me down. She said, why don't we watch the TV? And I said, no, we can't watch the TV because it's going to be full of news reports of me killing the children. So I was just convinced that I had, it was like this weird dream where I didn't really understand what was happening. Wow. But anyway, I hadn't taken the citalopram, the antidepressant, for a couple of days by then. So then on the Monday morning, I woke up and I was just like, I was normal. I was like, oh my God, you know, what the hell has happened? I was in this posh private hospital, but there were bars on the windows. And I looked in the mirror and I was just kind of bedraggled because I'd been on this 4-day drug trip. And I couldn't make sense of it. I just thought that somebody must have spiked my drink with some kind of illegal drug like acid or something. That was the only thing that I could think of.
You didn't tie it to the antidepressant.
Yeah.
You didn't.
Yeah. I think there was this sort of vague idea that maybe it could have been. But it just seemed too outrageous that a prescription drug could cause that.
Especially a small little pill, right?
Just exactly. Exactly. And I kept on thinking that still I was slightly paranoid. I was like, is this a setup? Is this, you know, have I been set up? And I remember whilst I was psychotic, my ex had visited the private hospital that day on the Sunday. So I've been taken in on the Saturday night. I was fully psychotic on the Sunday. And And I thought that the whole thing was being filmed. I thought we were still on the game show and that people were voting as to who is the better parent or not. And so I started screaming to my ex, you know, you must, please, you know, can we just stop the game? You know, can we just help? And these nurses ran in and gave me some Valium, and the children were sort of whisked away. Of course, they were quite traumatized by it. But anyway, so on the Monday morning, I woke up and I was fine, and I didn't really understand what was going on. And when this psychiatrist came around, I said, look, I'm fine now. Can I go home now? And to which he just sort of laughed, because less than 24 hours ago, I'd been talking about a suicide pact with God. And I had, of course, a huge gash on my arm where I'd stabbed myself with a knife. So he wasn't going to let me go. And he insinuated that I would be sectioned if I tried to leave. So I was kind of traumatized, a bit shell-shocked, and everything would have been fine had it not been for the fact that he then said, well, of course, what we need to do is we need to put you on some medication because you've been delusional. You seem a little bit better now, but we definitely need to give you some kind of medication. So, as you know, if you react adversely to one antidepressant, there's a very strong likelihood that you'll react badly to the lot. So I can't remember which antidepressant or which antipsychotic I was put on. But anyway, it started again. Immediately I had akathisia, immediately it was seen as worsening depression. So I was in this very posh private hospital, and I was told I had to go to therapy. Of course, I couldn't sit still in the therapy because of the akathisia. So they immediately thought that I had that I was very agitated. Well, I was very agitated, but because of the akathisia, and it was agony. Anybody who has experienced it as you have, wow. So I was there for 3 weeks. I just about managed to persuade them to let me out. But it was under then the supervision of my ex. I was allowed home, but under the supervision of various people, such as my ex-husband and other people and so on and so forth. And I was told that I had to take the drugs, by which time I was also slightly hooked on the drugs. And by then I kind of knew intuitively that it was the drugs, but I couldn't get off them. One, because I was worried that I would be sectioned again, and I probably would have been. Secondly, I think I tried to miss a dose and immediately went into withdrawal. And so that frightened me very much. And I had to keep going back to the private hospital. And that began a year-long agonizing kind of just a sort of more and more psychiatric drugs. And I remember there was a turning point when I was given the drug olanzapine. And then I just went from very ill to catatonic. Wow. And I'm sure it's one of the drugs that you've been on, right?
Oh yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I just remember that moment, and it was like someone had just stolen my mind at that point. I was unable to dress myself. I was unable to bath myself. I was unable to do anything. I ate a huge amount of food. So within a short amount of time, I put on half of my body weight, actually. So put on 3 or 4 stone. Well, 4 stone would be half my normal body weight. And I became a complete dribbling wreck that I couldn't leave the house, basically. So I couldn't concentrate on anything. I couldn't read a book. I couldn't do anything at all. And I became my children just were completely alienated from me, because I was just this, I couldn't feel anything. I couldn't talk to them. I couldn't really do anything at all. So basically, I just got worse and worse for that entire year. It was an entire year. I moved out of the family home because the children couldn't bear me to be there. So I ended up in a flat living on my own, and then I kept on readmitting myself to the private hospital every time the private insurance would allow me to do that, because I just didn't know where to turn, to be perfectly honest. I was in such agony with the akathisia, and every time I went back, it was a different diagnosis, and it was a different, you know, more pills. Oh, she must be, you know, don't worry, we'll just, you know, reduce the quetiapine and then increase the Prozac and put in a bit of this, a bit of that. And then there was just various different diagnoses. First, it was psychotic depression. Then it was treatment resistant depression. Then of course I was bipolar, and they added in the lithium thing. Yeah. And it just went on and on. So at the end of that year, I'd sort of lost everything. There was no chance of me ever working again. I mean, I literally couldn't finish a sentence. The children didn't, they screamed every time they had to come and stay with me. They just couldn't bear it. I think fair to say that I was quite into keep fit and stuff, but I literally couldn't. I became a chain smoker, by which I mean, so I was smoking 70 cigarettes a day to try and combat the effects of the drugs. So I was on 7 or 8 drugs at this point: antidepressants, antipsychotics, mood stabilizers, sleeping pills, etc., etc. And I also started drinking at that point as well, because it was the only way. I was just desperately trying to get some rest from the akathisia.
Yeah.
So there was sort of no escape. And so at the end of that year, for the third, fourth time, I went back to the private hospital. And at that point, I was very, very ill indeed. I was nearly psychotic. The notes say that I was taking off my clothes and that I was put on suicide watch. And I was only there for 2 days at that point, because magically, and I feel that grace stepped in at this point, the doctor, the psychiatrist, came in and he said, "I'm terribly sorry, Mrs. Newman, but you can't stay here anymore because your private insurance has run out, you know, on and off throughout the year. I think there was a £50,000 limit, and I'd used it all up. So that was it. Bye-bye." They just discharged me out into the community. So I was back in this small flat, and I was then under the treatment, the state treatment team. And so these lovely people used to come in every day and make sure that I was given my drugs, and, you know, that I was kind of eating. Well, I was certainly eating, that was for sure. That was the only thing I was doing. So after a few, it must have been another week or whatever, I really thought that I wanted to end my life. I really did. There was nothing left. There didn't seem to be any way out of this. I'd lost my children. I was never going to work again. And I couldn't think. I'd totally lost my mind. And so I started thinking of ending my life at that point. In all this blur, I think I must have remembered that I had 2 children somewhere that kind of like no longer really wanted to see me anymore. But somehow, even though I was completely numbed by the drugs, so there was very little feeling, I can't say that I really felt love for my children or anything, because that's what the drugs do for you. Yeah. But I think that I must have remembered that I had some children somewhere, that even though they didn't want to see me, that they may be affected somehow by my suicide. So one of the treatment teams came to give me my pills, and I said, "You need to take me to hospital." And she said, "Really?" And I said, "Yeah, you really do, because I'm very ill." So she took me to a state hospital, and I said the words that I knew that would get me sectioned. And they also happened to be true. I just said, I'm here because I'm going to kill myself. I want to kill myself. And I think the psychiatrist was actually furious at that point, because there were not enough beds, right? So he really didn't want to section me, but he sort of had to. And it was the thing that saved my life, because amazingly, what happened was very unusually, they detoxed me from all of the drugs. Wow. They said that they wanted to start all over again. I went into absolute agonizing withdrawal. I can't even begin to explain how awful that was. And it went on for 3-4 weeks. I was literally at certain points where I was on the floor and couldn't stand up because of the side effects from coming off of those drugs. And then I remember, I just remember the day. I just was better, literally overnight, I was better. And I remember looking in the mirror and it was extraordinary. I just looked at myself. I was like, wow, what has happened? I had these scratch marks all over me because I had torn my skin apart because of the side effects of the drug withdrawal. And I just looked in the mirror and I was just like, what on earth has happened? You know, what has happened in the last year? So to cut a long story short, I was reunited with my children. Luckily, they didn't pump me full of drugs again. They recognized that I was better. They let me out. But whilst I was in that hospital, I Googled antidepressant side effects.
Wow.
And I was like, oh, and somebody's name came up, Professor David Healy, world leading expert. And I contacted Professor Healy and I said, look, this has happened. Is it possible that the drugs could have caused this? And he said, you have no idea how lucky you are. People who have that kind of reaction to the drugs, they very often end up killing themselves, killing other people. And I think at that point, I had some kind of realization that I had got off lightly, that I could have killed my children. So I had to kind of get my life back. I had to get the children back, get a home, get a job, et cetera, et cetera. But that conversation with Professor Healy stuck in my mind. And so I started researching the subject. It wasn't just me, actually. It was me and the kids. We started researching the subject. I was completely better by then. I was traumatized, but I was just 100% better. But we all had to understand what had happened. So we all went on this journey together, me and the kids, who were, of course, were delighted to have their mother back again. But I was determined that they would know that this could never happen to me again, that it was the drugs that had caused it, because I was worried that they would think that at any point their mother could go completely bonkers, stab herself with a knife and end up in a psychiatric hospital. I knew for sure that it was the drugs, but I had to prove it to them, I suppose. And so we went on this incredible journey and we started reading up about it. One of the first books that we read was an amazing book called Dying for a Cure by somebody called Rebecca Beddoe, who is an Australian lady who the similarity between her story and my story was striking, except that for her, it had been postnatal depression. She'd ended up in a hospital, given loads of drugs, and she and I became quite close friends. I went and visited her in Australia, but that was one of the first books that me and the kids read. And then we read all the other books and we were like, wow, this is just extraordinary as to the harm that these drugs have done. And so I decided that I wanted to tell people about what had happened. And so the first thing that I did is that I'd had many conversations with Professor David Healy at this point, and he'd I'd read many of his books, and I was aware of his website Risk. And so I, by then, wanted to run a half marathon. I got very fit very quickly, and so I decided that I wanted to raise money for Risk. And he put me in touch with, he said, I want you to speak to somebody who might be able to help. And that was somebody who became a very close friend of mine, David Carmichael, and he told me the very moving story of how he became psychotic from an antidepressant, and it resulted in the death of his son. And I think probably that was the moment that I decided that the most important thing that I could ever, ever do was to publicize the fact that these pills can cause ordinary people with no mental illness to kill, and that this has been proven in courts around the world. And I became immensely grateful for the fact that when I became psychotic, that it was myself that I stabbed and not the children, because it could have been the other way around. And the more I read up on the subject, I just read so many accounts of people who had become psychotic. And the weird thing was is that their psychosis was just so identical to my own. So I always know when I'm talking to somebody who really did experience that, because you couldn't make it up. But an antidepressant psychosis, it's always characterized by the same kind of paranoia, the hallucinations about knives, killing yourself, killing other people. And so I was just it was so extraordinary to find that the brain does this with this particular type of drugs. And I remember somebody saying, well, when people become psychotic from cannabis, they have religious sort of religious kind of psychosis. But an antidepressant-induced psychosis, it just seems to end with people killing other people, becoming suicidal, homicidal. And so I became aware of court cases around the world. I think the first one was David Hawkins, an Australian, who I think in his 70s, he killed his, just he I think it was, he took, he changed the dose of his antidepressant and he ended up killing his wife. Obviously, there was absolutely no reason why he would kill his beloved wife of many years. And I think that was one of the first cases where a judge ruled that antidepressant caused him to kill his wife. And there have been many other cases around the world.
Well, we're getting a lot of feedback from the audience, so I think I'd like to read a few. One asked for clarification. You did not have a mental health diagnosis before taking the first drug, correct?
Well, no, I was just...
couldn't sleep, right?
I couldn't sleep.
Yeah.
And a week before, I was completely fine. So a week before, I was training for a marathon, half marathon. I was happy. I was I was working. I was doing a great job. So the thing that had caused my distress, and it was an acute, I'm not going to lie, it was an acute distress. I was really upset about losing the family home. Mm. So it was that incident that had caused that. Now, whether you call that distress or depression, I suppose is a question of semantics, isn't it?
But I like the differentiation that you use between distress and depression. Like it's situational. It's not, you know what I'm saying? It's not a disorder. Is something was happening in your life that you could pinpoint. Yeah.
Yes. But I can absolutely assure you that if somebody had said, oh, you know, it's all changed, you can actually keep the house, I promise you, I wouldn't have been depressed at that point.
Right. So then another person asked, did you remember all these details of the drug-induced psychosis, or did someone have to tell you later?
No, I remember it clear as daylight. I remember I just remember every single thing about it. I remember running to the park and looking for trying to find my children who I'd apparently killed. So why was I running to the park if I'd killed them? It was like this terrible, terrible dream. I remember it.
Yeah. And I'm just going to bring myself in here. I don't always like to, but I did have, just listening to you tell the story again, I can literally feel it in my body, just like how terrifying, because I went through very, very similar. Some of it's in the film, some of it's not. Obviously, it's a very taboo subject, but I came off of benzodiazepine last and I had the same thing with knives. And it was the whole reason I went to the hospital, because I thought I was going to stab myself. And I was like, I knew for me, I was like, why would you be thinking about knives? Like that was not something, I was in the military. We had guns, not knives. Like it was never a thing. So to me, it was so scary and so not me. It was like, I knew something is really wrong and I don't know what it is, because that's not something I ever thought about in my life, you know, but I had the same feeling. So it's also interesting that you said antidepressants with the knife theme, because I wonder if it's also with benzos, or was it because I had a history of antidepressants? I don't know, but I had the very same thing. And the feeling of like, when you come out of it, looking back, like what in the hell happened? Like it was a nightmare that you're waking up from, you know?
Mm-hmm. Terrifying. Yeah. It is terrifying.
Yeah. So here's another comment. The person said the realities of adverse effects and side effects are not communicated with patients properly when they are prescribed. The NHS needs to be properly educated in this so they can inform patients fully at the point of prescription. And what I want to bring in here is, you know, the fact that, I don't know, I've read the pamphlet and I never thought any of these things could happen to me, but it is clearly listed that, like, if you look at an antidepressant, and I urge everyone in the audience to do this, just search FDA pamphlet and then put the name of the drug. You can either use the generic name or the name brand and read the whole thing. And it literally will say, like, a person can have homicidal thoughts at a therapeutic dose. A person can have psychosis at a normal low dose at any time. Like, it's literally in the pamphlet. But I don't understand how, if it's in the pamphlet and then, like, you went through this experience and you went to this private hospital and everyone said this is a mental illness, nobody recognized this is an adverse reaction.
Yeah. Well, I think what is, it's difficult, isn't it? Because obviously people who take antidepressants might well be suicidal beforehand. Right. But the telltale sign is akathisia, isn't it, really? And I think when I came out with my story and book and publicised it and so on and so forth, I was actually really shocked at how little is known about akathisia, because that is the telltale sign when someone is having a severe adverse reaction. It's the fact that they can't keep still. And it's one of the things that causes people to kill themselves, because the agony of akathisia is so great that death seems like a welcome result. And so if I could change anything, it would be that the medical community understands what akathisia looks like, because I was in a top London hospital and nobody recognized it, not the nurse, not the doctor, not the psychiatrist, not the therapists. Nobody recognized it. And actually, I know people who sort of know about the adverse effects of drugs. And when somebody close to them has akathisia, they miss it as well. It's easily missed. If you've had it, you immediately recognize it in somebody. Like, if somebody walked in now with akathisia, I would just know it just like that, as you would, right?
My aunt actually got it in a psych hospital in St. Louis. She's not on Facebook, so... but the minute I saw her, I said, "Where's your doctor? You have it right now." But hers was, she was rolling in her fingers and she was marching, like she was in a marching band and she couldn't stop moving. So this is just a wonderful conversation. But let me move to the next question, because we have some really good questions. Oh, before we move though, on the topic of akathisia, in the next few weeks, we will have Wendy Dolan from MISSD, MISSD. So we will be talking a lot about akathisia, and Christina Gerke will be on the week after her. So we're going to have like 2 weeks about akathisia, and there's a course called Akathisia 101 for medical professionals. So we will be talking about that in the next few weeks. So here's the part that's dear to me also, is writing about your experience. Can you take me through, like, how was that for you to write about this, to like recall how scary it was, and how you involved your children, and kind of like the process of writing the book, The Pill That Steals Lives?
Okay. So I never wanted to write a book. I'm a filmmaker. And when I came out of this experience, I wanted to make a film about it. And I put together a treatment for a film, which would involve these stories of people who had killed their children and so on. And it was about how antidepressants can turn people into killers, you know, and there were plenty of examples. And for a year I tried to get that commissioned, and broadcasters didn't really, they found it probably too challenging to take on at the time, for quite obvious reasons. Seemed pretty litigious. So after about a year, I was going to give up. I was absolutely ready to give up. And I have somebody who is my agent, and who was really, really inspired to take this story further. He put in a lot of time. He really felt strongly about this. And he wanted the film to work, and was disappointed that we couldn't get it off the ground. So after about a year, I said to him, "Look, I know this is awful, but I'm going to give up now, because I spent a year trying touting it around. Nobody wants it. we've invested a lot of time in it. I'm just going to move on. And he said, well, have you ever thought about, he said, can you write? And I said, no. And he said, well, can you just write a chapter of about what happened to you? And so I thought, well, all right, I may as well. I didn't have anything else to do. So I started writing. And as I started writing, I thought, actually, this is quite a compelling story, because the way that the story started was I woke up in a private hospital, and there were, you know, cameras looking down on me, and it was, you know, obviously me and my psychosis. And I thought, actually, this is quite a good story. And so I sent him that chapter, and he liked that chapter, and he said, can you write me another chapter? And from that moment, I couldn't stop writing. It was just immensely cathartic. And I just started, I just wrote and wrote and wrote. And I always say that I never really wrote that book. I just had to show up at my computer and something else was directing me. I just felt like it's never happened to me since, but it just felt like someone else was writing this for me. And but of course, because of researching the film, I had all of this knowledge as well. I'd read all of these books, and I'd also spoken to loads and loads of people, because part of my therapy was to go out and to meet people to whom this had happened. So I'd spent an awful lot of time speaking to people like Rebecca Beddo, or people who'd written books, or just people who I'd founded through support groups and stuff. So interspersed with my story was bits of research and so on and so forth. So as I was writing this, I had another meeting with my so I was sending this to my agent. He's more of a kind of literary agent anyway, so he was thrilled to be kind of like, you know, that a book was coming his way. But then he said, look, the problem is, he said, is that before you get too excited, your story will only make up about half a book, right? Your story of, you know, the private, you know, psychosis, private hospital, then you get better, etc. All very interesting. But that's half a book, I'm afraid. And it's got to be, whatever, 80,000 words. Mm-hmm. So I just thought to myself, I'm a documentary filmmaker. I sometimes work on observational documentaries where you just don't know what's going to happen. So I just thought, as an experiment, I'm just going to write in real time what happens to me and my kids as we go on this journey to publicize the fact that these pills can turn ordinary people into killers. And at the time, a national newspaper, the Daily Mail, they contacted me because they wanted to run a feature on my story. It was the first time that anyone had really taken any interest. This reporter comes around, interviews me, and it was like a full page story, our story about what had happened to me. It was very moving for me, because it was the first time that I'd had a voice and that I'd been sort of listened to. And actually, I was slightly frightened that you know, they would ring that somehow the story would get axed. Do you know what I mean? That they would sort of ring the hospital and just say, no, she's a total nutcase. Don't listen. And I was also worried. For many years, I had this kind of like fear that somehow men in white coats were suddenly just going to come out of nowhere and just take me back to the hospital, and I was going to be pumped full of drugs. That was a kind of negative fantasy that I had. And that came about as I became braver at sharing my story. That fantasy sort of kept on haunting me. So anyway, that happened. And then I decided to make a kind of like mini film of me and the kids. So I asked a cameraman to come around and to just film us interviewing each other. And it was really a beautiful experience, because it was the first time that the children, of course, had talked about it. And we all just cried and cried. So my daughter, who was 13, 14 at the time, she interviewed me, I interviewed her, we interviewed my son, he interviewed me, and we all just cried and cried and cried. And it was like the best therapy that we could ever have had. And so that was the first bit of the film. We told our story, and then we went on a journey to talk to other people. So we filmed an interview with David Carmichael on Zoom, and then we were lucky enough to be invited to a conference that was hosted by the Council for Evidence-Based Psychiatry, and Peter Gercher was doing a talk there, so that made it into the film. And then, so the book, the rest of the book was about anything that happened in our little menage about me and the kids making this film, trying to publicize our story and trying to get a bigger film commissioned, right? So that was the end of the book. So the book then finally made it to 80,000 words of whatever it, pages, whatever it had to be. And that was the book. And I wrote it very quickly. It was like sort of 5.5 weeks or whatever. That was it. It was done. It went to the agent. He liked it. And I was very lucky to get a publisher who was great at getting it out into the national press. So I was very, very, very lucky. I had a lot of love and support around me, a lot of goodwill. And my children, bless them, were so angry about what had happened to me that they were happy to share their stories, I suppose, both in the book and the little mini film that we made, which we've now made into an 8-minute pilot. But anyway, the book and the pilot somehow then made its way to the BBC and the BBC's flagship current affairs programme, Panorama. They saw it and they then talked to me about the research that was in the book. And of course, that research had all been legaled by the book publishers. So things that had seemed quite dangerous to say, like antidepressants can turn ordinary people into killers. Well, it was all backed up by the brilliant research of the Cochrane Centre, Peter Kircher, David Healy. You know, I'd had to be very, very thorough about what I'd said in the book. So it was very easy then for a current affairs programme to be able to sort of take that and then make that into a bigger film.
Amazing. So how was it received? A lot of people are already asking the same thing. How is the film, the book, your story been received? Right. The nuance here is always that, you know, some people are helped, you know, there's always like, they help some people and we get it from our film, like the drugs saved my life, you know. How has that all been for you?
Well, of course, and I've always said that I'm not anti-medication at all. That the drugs, they can help people without any doubt. They can be appropriate for some people, but there are a large number as well for whom they're not helpful, and 1 in 100. And I think that's a modest estimate, have become homicidal or suicidal from the drugs. So how was it received? Well, the film had a lot of criticism. The film, the Panorama film, it was quite controversial because it featured the stories of people who had killed and killed because of antidepressants. And there was a lot of criticism from psychiatrists who said that it was unbalanced and that it would stop people from taking their medication. But I think that it was always clear that this is something that happens for a small minority of people. And that is absolutely the case. There is a small minority of people who become suicidal or homicidal from these drugs, and an even smaller percentage that become psychotic. So it is rare, but it's still an important side effect. And when people suffer that side effect, they're not just at danger to themselves, but to other people as well. So of course there was criticism, but my answer to that is that it's like a peanut allergy, isn't it? It's, you know, they're okay for some, but for those that they're not okay for, they're highly dangerous.
Right. I like the peanut allergy for sure. Oh, well, that takes us to the website, and we're getting close on time, and I know we're going to go over just a little bit, but let's talk about the new website, antidepressantrisks.org. What caused you to create it? Who helped? Tell us all about it.
Antidepressant risk. Well, it was, it largely came out of the idea of an idea that Professor David Healy had, which is that he has for a long time, he wanted to have a memorial wall for people to post photos and the stories of people who'd lost their lives from antidepressants. And he'd been talking about that well, not just from antidepressants, from all medications, actually, is what he was interested in doing. Being a filmmaker, it was natural that I would want to change people's opinions by being able to tell the stories of people who've been affected. So whilst there are plenty of other sites who are doing a fantastic job, who are publishing scientific research, etc., what I was interested in was to give people a platform to publish their stories. So in antidepressantrisks.org, there is a stolen lives section, and people can post a photo and their description of either somebody close to them who has been killed by antidepressants, or people like yourself who have been harmed by antidepressants. And I think for me, it's through sharing stories that people learn. So you can read as much as you like of, you know, scientific studies or whatever, but until you hear the story of somebody who, in good faith, took an antidepressant and then may have reacted quite well, but then years later they can't get off the drugs and they're suffering severe side effects. Because of course, what my story illustrates is a severe adverse reaction, but the greater problem in my view, or the more prevalent problem, is the fact that many people start off well taking the drugs, and it acts as gives them a temporary lift, or it stops them being anxious or whatever. But then their brains or their bodies become accustomed to them, they have to take more, or even if they don't, they become hooked, and then they are stuck with a number of very difficult side effects, and it can be very difficult coming off. And there are people on the site whose stories you could read who, well, they thought antidepressants were great until they tried to come off them. And many stories of people who can't get off them, or people who have had to take 5-6 months off work in order to come off them, and have got long-term effects such as tinnitus, brain zaps, sexual side effects. All of those things they weren't warned about. So antidepressant risks is to help people understand the risks of antidepressants through personal testimonies, really. Yeah. It is just to help people understand.
Yeah. And I can just say, from you asked me to submit my own story to write for the and I pushed it off. You know, I kept like pushing it off. I was like, it was just so hard. It was hard, but also it was therapeutic and cathartic to kind of write it out, to reread it, to have a friend read it, to like cry about it, to talk about it, to realize the gravity of like 15 years of your life. Like me, my personal story was, you know, 6 years ago, even just 6 years ago, as recent as that short of time, I thought the meds were helping me, that they saved my life, that I pretty much believed I'd be on them forever. And then just like one day it just kind of turned on me, you know? And then when you read all these books and you listen to other people's stories and you start, like you did, I did the same thing you did, where it all makes sense now. Like, wait, like all those, me losing my feelings, me losing friendships, me not wanting to go anywhere, that wasn't really me. That was like a side effect and an adverse reaction. And oh my God, and those times that I got suicidal and I had to go to the psych ward, now it makes sense because I read other people's stories and read the pamphlets and read the scientific literature and read books from experts and putting it all together and just figuring it out. So I can just say from my own personal experience, that please write your book write your story up and submit it to antidepressantrisks.org, because it did help me just in my own healing. And it kind of stands like to have something out there that other people can read, to give your own suffering some meaning, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. And also to say that so many of the people who contact me, they have just had their voice stolen. They haven't been listened to. People who've been harmed and people who have lost those close to them. The coroners aren't saying, oh, these were the drugs that caused your relative to kill themselves. That's not happening. So it's really, we also have people on the site who have committed crimes because of antidepressants, who've killed those close to them. Someone called Kurt Danish has bravely shared the story of how at the age of 18, he killed his dad, suffering an adverse reaction to an antidepressant. These people have not had a voice about what's happened to them. So thank you for saying that, because I really hope that it helps people, that they can just tell their stories, that they can be heard. And so many people who suffer adverse effects, their doctors report that their doctors don't believe them. They say that it's the return of the depression. They're voiceless.
Yeah. And that speaks to a larger question. What do you think about this? Like, we've noticed this with the film a little bit too, that people say, like, the film Medicating Normal is, it's biased. You're showing stories of harm. Why don't you show stories of people that are helped by meds? Why do you think it's so hard for the public to listen to the stories of people that have not done well on antidepressants or other psych drugs?
It's hard because we all want to believe that when the going gets rough, that there'll be a magic pill, as I did, actually. And that we don't want to hear the truth, which is that life is really challenging, and that there's no such thing as a free lunch, that anything that numbs you, whether it's drink, drugs, or prescription drugs, that they all have effects. There are consequences to all of those things, but we like to think that if it's a drug that is given to you by a doctor, that's okay. That it doesn't come with consequences. It doesn't come with side effects. So I think that's the reason and I include myself in that. I would love to believe that there was a magic pill to take when life gets tough.
Yeah.
I learned the hard way that there isn't. And I'm not, and I do appreciate that there are some people out there who antidepressants will have helped because it will reduce their anxiety for a short amount of time. It might give them a sort of temporary lift that they need to deal with a crisis. I think that long term, we don't have perhaps sufficient data to know how they affect people, but my goodness, there are the Facebook groups teeming with people who are suffering long-term effects of antidepressants. And just in my close social network, whenever I talk about this, I just hear these stories of people who say that, oh, my antidepressant it was a lifesaver 10 years ago, but now I can't have sex with my husband, or now I can't get off the pill without having brain zaps. I'd have to take time off work or whatever. I can't cope without the pill. So I do hear of that quite a lot.
Yeah. So that brings us to I'm just curious, because I'm sure you've had to read all these stories that people have submitted to the website during your launch. Have you noticed any themes?
Well, all the people that contact me are people who have been harmed by antidepressants. I mean, I get the same criticism, but my answer is the same: is that if I had created a site for people with peanut allergies, would people be saying, "Well, how come you aren't talking about all the people who are completely fine with peanuts?" The reality is that I don't believe that people who take antidepressants understand all the risks. I just don't believe it. I know that to be a fact, that people, when they go to their doctors do not say to them, there is a very small chance that you'll become suicidal. And it is a small chance, 1 in 100. But that in over 50% of cases, you may suffer sexual side effects, and that in more than 50, according to recent data, that in more than 50% of cases, you will have withdrawal effects and find it hard to get off the drugs. I don't think that always happens. I don't think that people understand that these pills come with very real risks. So that's the purpose of the site.
And what are your hopes for the site in the future? And how can we help you get the word out from our side?
Well, I mean, my feeling of course is that at the moment it's preaching to the converted, that we're attracting people who are who have been adversely affected. And I would love for this to get into the mainstream so that doctors can say, look, we haven't got time to tell you all the risks, but just go to this website and the facts are there, so make up your own mind. I would like it to get into the mainstream, really, and I would love for more people to share their stories. That's it, to help people understand. I mean, in life consists of people having to take intelligent risks. It's what life is about, isn't it? So you weigh up the risks and the benefits. So I would like people just to have a more complete picture.
I like that. Nicole, who's in the comments right now, she's on our outreach team. She has an analogy. She says, like, when you buy something from Amazon, you read the reviews and you take that into account. When you buy a new car, you might read, you know, a car and driver or something and read about that.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, why don't we do that with drugs though? We just assume they're going to be fine, that my doctor said they're safe, that there's no consequences. Even I did that when I read the pamphlet and it says dizziness or heart palpitations. I'm like, oh, that's nothing, I can handle that. But until you experience like the depth of how horrific that can be, where it's not just dizziness, it's like literally you can't get off the floor and to like make your own meal or take a shower, you know, it's like we don't believe that could happen, really.
Yeah. And also we've all been subject to a great deal of advertising, haven't we?
Yeah.
I mean, the pharmaceutical companies are able to advertise in the States, and those messages filter through elsewhere, don't they? So there was a lot of misinformation out there that people who had depression, that they had a chemical imbalance and that these drugs were going to sort of top up your serotonin levels so that everything was going to be fine.
Right.
So a lot of people I speak to, they believe that depression is caused by a chemical imbalance. I believe that. I think the psychiatrists that treated me, they told my children that your mommy is very ill, she's got a chemical imbalance, was something that I believed. So, of course, now I know that there has been no scientific evidence for that at all. It's just a myth.
Yeah. So someone's asking if they want to tell their story, how do they submit it and how do they get in contact with you?
Right. Well, if you go to antidepressantrisks.org, there's a section which is called Submitting Your Story. And then all of the guidelines are there. And I would love to hear from you.
So there is no questions because everyone is so engaged by your ability to talk about this in such a, I don't know, articulate.
Maybe they've all gone home, actually.
No, they're there. I don't even want to tell you how many. This is probably one of our bigger audiences we've ever had. So they're enthralled with everything we're talking about. So do you have any closing thoughts? Anything that we missed that maybe you want to talk about before we wrap it up?
Perhaps it's where my personal journey has taken me, which is that I just feel strongly that antidepressants, they numb feelings, don't they? But for me, my big discovery is that feelings are information, that we need those feelings, and that now if I'm feeling anxious, I tune into that and I just go, there's usually a good reason. And if you're feeling what we seem to just kind of call depressed, when we say we're depressed, we don't necessarily mean that we're kind of that we're suffering from the illness of depression. We usually mean that we're distressed, but if we're feeling like that, there's usually a reason. It's, for me, it's feelings are information. It's part of being human and it's part of being normal. And it's just such a shame, I think, that that people's normal feelings are being medicated, and that I think somebody in your film said this in Medicating Normal, but we're no longer comfortable with discomfort, that discomfort has become depression. But that actually anything, even negative feelings, can be an opportunity. Even depression can be an opportunity. It's an opportunity for growth. It's an opportunity to understand what it is that is causing that.
Yeah.
And that, of course, medication just numbs that. And that might be appropriate for some people, might help them through a difficult patch. But long term, maybe we need our feelings.
Yeah. Yeah, when I asked you about themes earlier, the theme that I've noticed has been a person has something like what you just said, you know, a death in the family, a challenging boss, stress at school. Me, it was a trauma from going to war, you know, as a soldier. Something happens and then you feel all these feelings and you're not really sure what to do with them. And you go to seek help and then you get put on medication, you get a diagnosis. Mm-hmm. And then years go by. And, you know, sometimes there's just a feeling like something's not quite right, or why don't I feel good? Or maybe I want to have a child and come off the drugs, you know, but then something else will happen. And then the person will start like, experiencing adverse reactions, or more meds are added and then they get akathisia. So that's the theme I've noticed, is that it starts with distress. You know, it starts with something really big in their life that happened. And then 30 years go by, you know, I know a guy who he broke up with a girlfriend in college and he's still on the drugs 30 years later. I mean, that's not, is that depression?
Then he's suffering the side effects of the drug, I guess.
Yeah.
After 30 years.
Yeah, who knows? But anyway, this was a wonderful conversation, Katinka. I just appreciate your work, all that you've done, that you've taken the suffering that you experienced and used it for good. I mean, I know just from writing my short story for you, it's hard.
As you have.
It's true, but it's
and
hard.
All of you, most of your team have done that, haven't they? They either know people or have experienced it themselves. You're all doing that, and it would just be great to warn people that this can happen.
Because I think we're coming from a good place. We don't want people to experience what we have. It's horrific. There's no language even for like.
There's no language. There's no language. There is no language for suffering the side effects of multiple drugs. Awesome. I just can't even begin to describe what it's like. Just losing your mind.
Exactly.
Not being able to do the simplest thing. Not being able to read a book. Not being able to walk to the shops because you would lose your way.
Exactly.
You've been through it. And
I mean, I'm 5 years off and I still suffer some of those effects. You know, I still have a hard time standing up and taking a shower with my eyes closed. I still have a hard time going to a shop because of all the lights and sound and movement. And it's like this weird neurological after effect that has not gone away, that I still, you know, it's physical. It's not like a mental thing. You know what I mean? Anyways, just thank you for having this conversation. Thank you for all the work you do. So to the audience, thank you for joining us for this live discussion. If you haven't seen Medicating Normal yet, please check out our website at medicatingnormal.com/watch to see a list of upcoming community screenings, or you can check our events tab on our Facebook page. We currently release new videos on our YouTube channel. I try every Wednesday and Friday, Wi-Fi depending, but so check out our YouTube channel. Also, this video will appear there in a couple weeks. Lastly, as I said earlier, in the next few weeks, we will be focusing on akathisia with Wendy Dolan and Christina Kaiser from MIST. That's medication-induced suicide in memory of student Stuart Dolan, and they do have a course for professionals. The week after that will be Kelly Fuchrad. She is a therapist and creative of Organic Mental Health Center in Austin, Texas. And feel free to email us at medicaidnormal@gmail.com. Visit our website. We have reading lists. We have research that was in the film. We have Katinka's website listed there. And one last time, Katinka, will you tell everybody how to get in touch with you?
Yes, it's at antidepressantrisks.org, where there's a stolen life section. And there's also a list of books that we've chosen and films like Medicating Normal and a number of other very brilliant films on this subject.
Perfect. And thank you all again. And goodbye for now. If you'd like to support our efforts, please visit MedicaidNormal.com/donate. And we will see you next week. Thank you.